Hi, this is Dr. Richard Bineda, Associate Director of the Sam Donaldson Center for Communication Studies at the University of Texas at El Paso. I'm especially pleased to introduce this week's TribCast because, quite frankly, this is about as much coverage of El Paso that everyone will authorize. Now here's Reeve and the Merry Trib Pranksters.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the third week of June. Joining me are Trib Pranksters Julian Aguilar.
Hello.
Ben Philpott.
I want to say happy anniversary to my wife. 14 years.
This might not come out till tomorrow.
Okay, well, 14 years plus a day then.
Okay. And Amon Bathija?
Hello. No anniversary.
No anniversary.
I'm a terrible husband, I guess.
That is going to be our first topic. we're going to talk about immigration and check in on the U.S. Senate race, as we like to do from week to week.
Is that why you had the UT El Paso person speak, because we're going to talk about immigration? Is that?
Wow.
No.
No. Although I guess
do the introduction.
We should address his insinuation that we don't cover El Paso that much. I would argue that we actually cover it a fair amount.
I would agree with you. I think that we cover it more than anybody else in Texas other than the El Paso Times.
Maybe he just misses it because of the time change, the time difference. You know, he misses the coverage.
Well, that man.
I'm a little confused about doing the podcast in two different time zones. So maybe.
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 Yeah, I don't think he was specifically talking about the TribCast.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Which sounds much better in that time zone. So immigration. Obviously, the biggest news is the Obama rule change. Can someone explain what that means? That's you, Julian.
Sure, yes, I think I can explain that.
You were looking right at him when you asked that.
So Friday morning, there was an announcement that the Department of Homeland Security, which has control over ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, CBP, and those agencies, that they were going to stop deporting and possibly granting two-year work permits for, what people call the Dreamers. Specifically, immigrants who are either here, brought here legally in an overstated visa, or brought here illegally from the get-go.
So not like Ben.
Not Ben.
Just a fan of musical theater. Different kind of dream.
Is that true, Ben?
Yes, I was in a show choir in high school and college.
Okay.
So moving on. So this directive applies to people that were brought to the country before they were 16 and have not yet reached the age of 30. They're renewable every 2 years, and what the president said, that this is not amnesty, this is not the Dream Act, it's a stopgap measure until Congress comes to kind of an overall immigration reform solution. So that's where we are.
Now, I think it's really interesting because I'm pretty sure I've heard people say that this absolutely is amnesty and absolutely is,
That's what the governor said. The governor called it amnesty and issued sort of a scathing statement about it. Of course, it's interesting because sort of his perceived allegedly moderate position on immigration issues for the same subset of the population is one thing that really got him in trouble in the presidential election.
Yeah, the heartless comment. Yeah, the thing out there is that this, it's like Dream Act Light, so to speak. But what the difference is this does not have any mechanisms for
citizenship.
Legal residency.
This is not a path
residency.
To citizenship.
Yeah, it's not a path, whereas the Dream Act, in various attempts to pass it in the last 10, 11 years, has a mechanism in place to where these folks can apply for legal permanent residency status, and then which eventually, if they wanted to, become citizens. What this does is just it allows them the opportunity to not get deported and to work for 2 years. So it's that there aren't any of these, pathway mechanisms in place. And that's exactly what the president said. He said, this is the best we can do right now until there's some sort of overhaul that has these mechanisms in place. So I think people are calling this amnesty because a lot of people call the Dream Act amnesty. And this has, elements of the Dream Act in it. So that's
Is the two years to work, does going to college count as work?
Yes, it applies in this instance. It's having graduated high school or obtained the GED or served in the military. Some college, so
you can apply and get a two-year stay legally and be going to college.
I think you have to show there are certain wrinkles that still have to be ironed out. I don't know if just going to college is enough, but if that's the case, and there's also student visas, but are a lot harder to obtain.
Okay.
A lot of attorneys, a lot of visas, a lot of paperwork, and things like that. So, but Reeve had a good point that everybody is calling this amnesty. I guess you can make an argument that it is, because, you know, these people are coming forth admitting that they broke the law, but not getting in any trouble. So, I mean, I don't know if that's amnesty or not, but that's why a lot of people are seeing it that way.
Well, and the difference between this and what we have in Texas, if you have gone to high school for a certain number of times, you've been in the country for a certain amount of time, and you sign a thing saying that you promise to sort of obtain legal status as soon as possible, then you can get in-state tuition and state aid. Although it sounds like they might be taking that up in the next session. We'll see.
Probably. But, so. Yeah. That'll be pre-filed,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that was called amnesty on the campaign trail, if I recall.
But I mentioned earlier that's something that got the governor in hot water during the presidential election. And, you know, on the trail, and he sort of walked it back, he said, if you don't think that we should be educating these kids who are brought here through no fault of their own, then I think you're heartless. And he walked that back and said, apologized. But, I asked his people, you know, why is that heartless to think that we shouldn't educate them and this amnesty and the worst thing ever? And he said his spokespeople said the difference was that with the Texas law, he let it go through the legislative process. It was approved overwhelmingly. Sure. And they were just dealing with the failure of the federal government and sort of having to cope with this situation that they found themselves in, where it's the federal government's job to make sure that immigration laws are enforced, which is what they're sort of explicitly not doing here.
Yeah, well, I mean, and also 2001, it was different than, 10 years later when everybody's talking about immigration. I think that began in 2006 when you had all these protests or whatnot, so it really got pushed to the forefront. But and what people call the Texas Dream Act, it's somewhat misleading, because the Texas Dream Act, like you said, is the in-state tuition thing, but that doesn't have any mechanisms for any sort of residency status, because that is the purview of the federal government. But as far as reactions, I think, this is going to dovetail nicely into what could come out as early as Thursday, if not probably likely on Monday, is the Supreme Court, the Arizona thing, because a lot of people have been watching Republican reaction to Obama's initiative. Former Governor Romney has been said to kind of, walk a fine line, not really, blasting it, but not really supporting it. I mean, even Marco Rubio, when he was shown recently, he's kind of shifting his language as well, saying, I don't support the Arizona law, but I support Arizona's right to pass these laws. So you can kind of already tell that they're kind of dialing back. So I think the Supreme Court case is really going to force people to say, yes, we support it, or no, we don't. And, how they react to that, coupled with this Obama thing, I think is going to be really, really interesting to see how people play up the immigration issue going into November.
And, of course, when is that happening?
The Supreme Court thing?
Yeah.
I just said it, Reeve.
But
you were on your phone. Could come as early as Thursday morning, if not Monday morning.
So what does it mean for the big race that's actually happening in the state right now, which is the U.S. Senate race?
I guess that's my turn now, right?
Yeah.
He was looking right at you.
Dewhurst and Cruz agree on almost everything that could come up in the Senate. We've asked them about a lot of different policy issues, and they're almost identical on a lot of different issues. So they've kind of had to find ways to differentiate themselves, and immigration's been a big one. They've been attacking each other's records on immigration to claim that what they say is their position, there aren't their actual positions. Dewhurst has said that he's implied that Cruz supports amnesty because he's belonged to some groups that, according to Dewhurst, support amnesty, but the groups disagree and Cruz disagrees. And Cruz has said that because Dewhurst didn't repeal in-state tuition for immigrants in Texas the whole time he's been lieutenant governor, therefore Dewhurst supports it, which Dewhurst says, no, I don't support it. The votes were never there. So there's been a lot of talk on immigration, and I was actually talking to some voters last week and I was just surprised how much immigration came up when I asked them about who they were supporting. I spoke to one woman who said she voted for Dewhurst in the primary. She's going to support Cruz in the runoff now because she now learned that Dewhurst supports the Dream Act. And I found one.
At any point do you say, well, if I were to tell you that's not true, would that change your mind?
Well, I tried to kind of figure out where she got this information from, and she wouldn't tell me. It was like it was a secret or something. But she kind of implied it was she'd heard from Cruz supporters and had been shown documentation. And
immigration is one of I had one of those moments when I was following Governor Perry up in New Hampshire. A guy, this was after the heartless comment. The governor came out with a really cohesive 5-minute explanation of his immigration policy on a stump speech, And he gave the 5-minute answer after a guy from the audience asked about the Texas tuition thing. And so we went up to everyone, you know, descended on the guy afterwards and said, well, now that you've heard his answer, what do you think? And he said, I just don't think I can vote for Perry because he is, you know, he voted for amnesty for all illegals. It's like, okay, well, I don't think that's true, but how does that change your opinion of whether or not you should vote for
Yeah, it's interesting how you would make that jump because really the in-state tuition policy is like a subset within a subset of the population, right? It's sort of people of a certain age who have been here for a certain amount of time who are willing to commit to a...
And who got into college.
Right.
I mean, it's not, you know, and people said, oh, well, this is giving free tuition. You know, this is, you know, all kinds of different things. And it's just interesting that, yeah, so if you don't allow for this bill to be taken out of the Senate, you're in favor of the DREAM Act and amnesty or something.
Well, and it was, you know, I mean, the support for it really has been just overwhelming in the legislature. I think 4 people voted against it in 2001. Yeah. It came up again in 2005, and they sort of revamped it a little bit, and that passed without any trouble.
Well, you know, the Michael Quinn Sullivans and others in the world would argue that the Texas House is completely different than it was in 2001 or even 2005, and that they have the votes now to get it through if that damn speaker would just let it, you know, come to the floor.
I mean, it's really striking how much the consensus on that has changed since Perry ran for president. That might be his biggest legacy, is that getting repealed, just because so many people...
His most moderate stance on the campaign trail will become a very conservative backlash during the next legislative session, maybe.
I was just going to say, I think it's also interesting to point out how you guys are, you know, you're talking to these voters and, you know, they have these ideas and these beliefs, is that what's missing from the conversation... from the moderates and from people on the right, as what people on the left have been screaming about for the last 3 years, is that the president's administration really has ramped up immigration. I mean, his administration has deported more people in 3.5 years than President Bush did in 8, according to DHS statistics. I think that's kind of getting lost, which I think a lot of people are on the left anywhere saying that the president had no choice but to issue this directive because he's upset so many people in the Hispanic community because he promised reform, and instead of doing that, he's actually ramped up enforcement.
Isn't that the cynical sort of political angle, right?
Sure.
It's like, oh, he needs to do that if he has any shot of
being re-elected. Yeah, and then you and I actually made a joke, like, you know, the next statement he's going to say, okay, if you're 16 or over, you know, you go ahead and vote. You know, it's like, it's not, these people aren't just...
That wasn't a joke.
Oh, Reeve Hamilton's policy right here. You heard it here first. A lot of people are saying, you know, because of the amnesty thing, that, you know, they're going to open the floodgate and make all these people citizens overnight. First of all, it's not that easy a process. It takes a lot longer. And, you know, because these people aren't citizens, they can't vote in the first place. So whether it really does, I guess, soothe the nerves of the Hispanic community, which a lot of people are saying, you know, could decide this election one way or another, remains to be seen.
Well, so if Dewhurst is for the DREAM Act, did you find some voters who said, you know, that took up the amnesty label with Cruz?
I did. I didn't even have to look very hard, and I found a Dewhurst supporter who said, oh, I like Dewhurst, and Cruz is for amnesty, so that's a non-starter. I can't support him.
So basically, anyone that you're not voting for is for amnesty.
Pretty much, yeah. And both candidates swear they are against amnesty. They both called Obama's order backdoor amnesty, mm-hmm. and they're a little less clear on what kind of guest worker program they would like, if any. Cruz says he's against any kind. Dewhurst has, in the past, like back when Bush was president, he's made some statements saying he supports a guest worker program, but now he says that he would never support any program that involves a pathway to amnesty or citizenship.
If you're a Republican who supports the decade-old in-state tuition policy in Texas, which may be a dwindling number of Republicans, but one argument that was presented to me last week, which I thought was compelling, was that, you know, it's been this ongoing problem where you have these kids that are now being allowed to go through school, but then they get out and they can't work. Yeah. And this is sort of in some ways a logical extension of the sort of generosity that's being extended to them through the in-state tuition thing, just saying like, okay, now you can get a worker permit.
So Obama's order is Perry's fault?
No, it's just, I mean, there's a sort of extension, there's sort of a logical connection between the impulses that drive both of them, I think. But, you know, I'm sure they would both deny that. So, Are the U.S. Senate Republicans going to debate? I know the Democrats have a debate coming up.
The Republicans are debating twice, as far as we know so far. They're debating Friday with KERA, and the Tribune is a partner in that debate, and Ross Ramsey is going to be one of the moderators. And then they're debating next month on WFAA, the Dallas ABC affiliate.
And so would you expect this to be sort of front and center, given the lack of daylight between them on other issues?
Yeah, immigration will definitely come up in the debate. And I've spoken to a lot of people, and people even with the campaigns, who feel like the debate is kind of going to be the start of the runoff, because until now they've kind of been going with the same arguments back and forth since the primary ended. And I think both sides expect that the debate might create a new narrative.
And what could that new narrative possibly be?
I'm guessing both would say that it's the other guy isn't a conservative.
The other one sports amnesty.
Whatever happened with the debate in Spanish, did that just kind of fade out?
For the most part, yeah. Technically,
it never really faded in, right?
Yeah, it was a Univision reporter asked Dewhurst about debating in Spanish, because Dewhurst's Spanish is pretty good. And I think, as I understand it, the Univision reporter mentioned to Dewhurst that Cruz's Spanish isn't very good, and that just kind of created this idea of, should there be a debate between you guys? And it kind of went off from there, and to the point that some national news outlets were saying Texas Republicans are going to debate in Spanish. As far as I know, no one's invited them to a debate in Spanish. Nice. But this Friday's debate will be broadcast in Spanish, I believe, by Univision. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it's Univision.
And when is the Democrats' debate?
Tuesday.
And are they going to change their narrative at all? Are they going to create a narrative?
No, I think they're actually going to get a narrative, which is in the news.
Their narrative is, hey, look at us.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, who's going to watch that? When did you
Andy
say it was?
Brown? I don't know.
Well, they're shooting it Tuesday. KERA is going to air it the day after, and I believe we're going to have it available on our website. And other stations around the state are going to air it whenever they want. But since it's not airing live, they get to air it whenever they want. Hmm.
So you have to call KLRU and find out when they're going to air it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, for the Republicans, you know, so basically nothing really has changed between the night of the primary and now, narrative-wise. I mean, there was the convention.
Yeah, and the Dewhurst got some boos, and there was a little bit of that, but...
Doos!
I'm sorry.
Doos! Oh, yeah, they were booing him.
And those are sort of... you could say those are just the diehard people at the convention. At the same time, that's probably who turns out in the July 31st runoff.
That's
election,
That's the fear that I think the Dewhurst campaign has, is that the most conservative, most active members of the Republican Party are the ones that are going to actually get out and vote. Now, actually, Ross had a point about this, I guess it was maybe last week, that the other group that always votes are the people that vote on every single city bond election and every single city tax election and every single, you know, school board election, and those people tend to skew older and more establishment, and that's, you know, Dewhurst's group. So,
and has that group been swayed by this ongoing Jordan Fishman narrative, or have they dropped that at this point? That doesn't seem to have moved the dial in their favor.
Well, they brought it up again after the primary when I believe a court's basically kind of reinforced the original judgment, and I get the sense they're going to bring it up again. They still think it's a powerful issue, and
this is the thing where Cruz is a lawyer in a case about a, I don't really know the full details exactly.
It's a Chinese tire company.
That
stole designs from a guy in Florida who has a company. He doesn't manufacture the tires in America. He actually manufactures the tires in China too, but his company is based in America. And he claims that because this company stole his designs, he had to cut almost like his entire staff down to, it was down, it went from like a couple dozen people to him and another guy because he lost all this business. And so he got an original judgment and in his favor, and Cruz became the lawyer for the appeal. And most recently, they just lost on one of their appeals.
Right. And, you know, they've been trying to tie the word China and Cruz together in a lot of ads. And I think at one point, Jay asked the lieutenant governor if he was trying to insinuate that that Cruz was a communist, and the Dewhurst said that was a ridiculous question. But it seems like a logical question given the tone of the ads.
Especially because the background in all the ads is red.
Just like Julian's shirt.
Yes.
Coincidence?
No, not at all.
Well, what else is going on in the world of Ben Philpott? I believe you spent yesterday at the Capitol.
Yes, I got to sit
the Capitol that Dewhurst is trying to flee from.
And then if you pay attention to the, if you believe the Cruz campaign, everyone wants him to flee from.
Right.
But yeah, I was there. The Texas, the House Public Ed Committee had a hearing yesterday, public hearing, getting a lot of feedback on the first round of STAR testing. State of Texas Academic Assessment and Skills, or no, I don't even know now.
Obviously, it's not skills. You were probably so close until that last letter. I was going to ask you, please don't try to tell us what the acronym stands for.
Well, it was a good idea. I should not have done it. I wrote it down yesterday, but anyway.
it stands for tax point two.
Yes, something like that. But, you know, they did the first round of STAR testing. This is for the accountability system at Texas Public Schools. Did the first round of testing this spring, got initial results back. The state did pretty bad in math scores. But, you know, and actually they spent a long time trying to understand this yesterday. How can you take a ninth grade algebra score on STAR and figure out what that means versus the ninth grade math test on tax? Ninth grade math test on tax last year, 70% of the students who took it passed it. The ninth grade algebra one test that was given, because STAR moved to end of course exams instead of general ninth grade math knowledge, the algebra one test, something like 39% of students that took it passed. If they'd used the same passing standard, this is really getting in the weeds. A 70s not passing on some of these tests. The TEA comes up with a standard and says, okay, if you make a 60, we're going to consider that passing. Or, you know, they could make it higher. They could say, if you make an 80, we're going to consider that passing.
But could they make it lower also?
Oh, yeah. They can make it 60. They can make it 50. They can make it several things.
Wasn't one of the tests had a ridiculously low passing
like in
threshold?
The 30s or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. From the STAR? Well, they haven't set the standards on STAR yet. Okay. But if you use the tax standards on what was passing ninth grade math, then only 39% passed the ninth grade algebra one course. And so they, you know, they got into this whole idea, well, you know, we need to check and see what, how did students do on the algebra one portion of the ninth grade tax. They actually have a bridge study that's going to explain, you know, how things are going, moving between the two tests out at the end of June. And they're trying to figure out, you know, how did people do on Algebra 1 last year in that broader tax test, and then compare that to the just Algebra 1 classes here. One of the interesting parts of the hearing was Scott Hochberg said, I don't understand. This is an end of course exam on a course that they're taking, not a course that they weren't taking, that, you know, you ran into that with tax, where like in ninth grade math, you might have algebra one. We also might have some geometry in there. You would have some general math. And so you would have, you know, kids that maybe were only taking algebra one, but they would end up not understanding other parts of the test. And this is algebra one. They've had algebra one all ninth grade, and only 39% got a, you know, quote, passing score on it. And Hochberg said, I understand this is a end of course exam. They're taking this course. You know, was this course not, was the test not supposed to test them on what they learned in the course? And they said, yes, the test was supposed to test them on what they learned in the course, but the test could have been too rigorous. He's like, I don't understand. Were they, is it testing them on what they should have learned in the course, or is it testing them on beyond what they should have learned in the course? It's testing them on what they should have learned in the course. Then a 39 means that they didn't understand what they were being taught in the course. It doesn't mean that the test was too hard. It means that, you know, that it's like making a 39 on your final exam as opposed to the STAR test. But they went back and forth on that, and TEA disagreed with Hochberg. And
couldn't it be sort of more about? I mean, you can have an easy test on stuff you've learned and a hard test on stuff you've learned.
That's true. And they also
be more nuanced.
They also brought in the point that the STAR exam, the end of course exam, is being taught or is being given 2 months before the end of school. Which is, and the reason is because if you want to get results out by, you know,
because it's the end of the course.
No, if you want to get results out, the timelines that are set up for when they need to get the results out for all the accountability stuff that they have to turn in to the federal government, you know, to let the schools know what their ratings are going to be and all that, they can't give the exam, you know, in May. But so there, you know, there may be, they may have been tested on things that are in the last couple of chapters of an Algebra 1 course book, which the students won't get into until April or May, but they were tested, you know, earlier in the year.
And so why did they, why did we have to change tests?
Because
this is seen as an improvement.
Well, this, the high school part, the people say it is seen as an improvement because, you know, the big argument has been, or one of the big arguments has been, it's just making teachers teach to the test, not teach the course material. And in a general, in especially at the high school level, if you had a general knowledge ninth grade math test, but you were a you know, a more advanced student, maybe you were in Algebra 2 already in ninth grade, teachers would take time to go back and review things that are going to be on the ninth grade general math tax test that you may not be covering, because Algebra 2 wouldn't be in the general ninth grade test. Well, now, if you're taking Algebra 2, you will have a Algebra 2 end-of-course exam that lines up with what you're supposed to learn in Algebra 2. So at the high school level, this is supposed to, yeah, you're still teaching to the test, but you're supposed to be teaching to the test anyway because it's a course. You're teaching to the course.
I just, one thing I wonder about these tests is, you know, if well, I've talked to testing professionals,
yes,
about this.
Like my wife.
Yeah, right.
Full disclosure.
You know, if you look at it, it's like, how can you compare what a student is doing on these tests today as compared to students in the 90s when the,
right,
tests were so much easier?
Right.
I,
yeah,
mean, and that's like, they're laughably easy if you go back and look at the old tests, and now they're not, yeah, laughably somewhat difficult.
And
that's,
yeah, that's difficult. And now
you can't pass it, yeah, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, that is the other point, is that when you look back at the original, what, TOSS, I don't even know what came before TOSS.
The TOSS.
Teams
before
TOSS.
So the teams,
they're going to have acronyms pretty soon.
Yeah, the teams math, like a basic math question on teams was usually one or two steps needed to solve the problem. And now we're up at the star level and it's like seven steps needed to solve the problem. So, you know, that would go into TEA's response to Representative Hochberg that, you know, just because, yes, it does follow the coursework within Algebra 1, and yes, they were being taught Algebra 1, it doesn't mean that the test wasn't more rigorous than, you know, what a general knowledge end-of-course exam would be on Algebra 1. Now, the other interesting thing about this, of course, also is that the chair and co-chair of the Public Ed Committee are gone. Mm-hmm. Rob Eisler lost in the primary, so, you know, he was there holding the meeting,
they're going to be gone.
They're going to be gone for the next legislative session. Yeah. Hochberg has decided to retire. On the Senate side, the Education Committee Chair has also, Florence Shapiro, has also decided to retire. So, you know, they were talking several times during the meeting. They made reference to bills that would be coming in 2013 to tweak different parts of the STAR system. And at one point, Eisler even made a joke, said, well, yeah, they'll be bringing bills, but they won't be ours, turning to Scott Hochberg. And Hochberg said, oh, sure, they might be ours, we just won't get to vote on them.
Oh. So. Yeah, that's sad.
A little lobbying. But it will be interesting. You know, they're going to have to look at different solutions for, you know, tweaking some of the STAR stuff, and there may be school finance, maybe not, coming up, and it's going to be a whole lot of inexperienced education lawmakers working at it in
and,
the next session.
And what's the 15% thing that
they did 15%. Because these are end-of-course exams, and again, they're supposed to be for the high school level, and they're supposed to be testing you on what you actually learned in the course, they decided to try and get kids to be concerned about the test so that they're not just, you know, you got with some kids that were, you know, straight-A students, they would look at these tests and they would just kind of do whatever on them because they knew it wasn't going to affect the way they, how, whether or not they graduated. They might only make a, you know, a 70 on the test as opposed to the 90 that they might would normally make because they're a straight A student, but they just didn't care. So to kind of buffer that, they made it 15% of your final grade in that course would come from what you did on the STAR test. And superintendents and parents pushed back on it, didn't like the idea, especially because it was an unknown test. They didn't know how hard or how easy it was going to be. So Robert Scott gave them all waivers for the year.
But it's a test on the stuff that they should have learned in the course.
Yes, but maybe it was too rigorous. Only 39% passed. I mean, yeah, it is a bit of a big mess. I mean, it's easy. I would sit back and just say, but it's an end-of-course exam. Why would you not think that an end-of-course exam in some way affects your final score? But, you know, it's easy for me to say I don't think we had standardized testing when I was in high school.
All right. Well, it's time for the end of TribCast exam.
Woo!
I'm going to take out your pencils. I'm looking down.
I am the 39%.
I'm looking forward to my wife telling me how many things I got wrong on all that. Yeah, right. So, yeah, any of you education wonks that are listening to this, you don't have to tell me what I got wrong. My wife will let me know.
or you can email them.
Oh, yes.
To tribcast@texastribune.org, along with your other questions and comments and desire to do the intro, if you want. On behalf of Iman, Ben, Julian, and Todd, our producer, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
No, I was about to wet myself. That was so scary. You're not allowed to use that
one. You are taping that right now.